Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are going to have another one of our Theater Baltimore conversations. Right now, it's in a stage into Sunday. There's an incredible play there, very powerful play. Funny, powerful, poignant, all the above. Gleam, which is written by Bonnie Lee Moss Rettner, based on the Zora Neale Hurston novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God. And when I was there, the audience was just still and blown away by the end of the play and watching it through. It was an incredible production. The set was amazing. The sound was amazing. And these three actors in our studios now were amazing in this play. We have with us Christiana Clark, who plays Janie, the centerpiece of the play. Brooks Edward Brantley, who played Tea Cake. Another role we'll talk about in a minute, just will blow you away when you see the play. And the woman who keeps it running through as her own individual Greek chorus, Stephanie Berry, who plays Phoebe Watson. Welcome to the studio. Good to have the three of you here.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, so what did you think when you heard about this play, when you first heard about it, auditioning for it? I mean, this whole idea of doing a play based on Zora Neale Hurston's
work. Well, first I was surprised that there hadn't been, I guess, an adaptation of it.
You knew the book beforehand.
And then I learned that it had been in the works. And now the combination of Center Stage Theater and Marion McClinton as director and this novel being brought to the stage was just an incredible opportunity. So I was very initially excited.
Yeah. Well, for me, Phoebe, it was very ironic because I actually not only knew the play, had been in a reading of it.
Oh, really?
And saw the first production at Crossroads almost 30 years ago.
Wow.
And the author, I know her team, at least came to a production I collaborated with Aisha Rahman. We wrote a blues musical on the life of Zora Neale Hurston. Yes.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
We all do.
It's wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
Wow.
And we had done that around the same time this came out, so they saw our piece, and then I know Crossroads very well, so I was there, and many of my friends were in the inaugural production. And then I was in a reading, so when I went to audition, it was like, I knew I had it before walking in just because of the irony.
Uh-huh.
And Bonnie, the playwright, looked at me and she said, "You look very familiar." I said, "Yes, I should look familiar."
That's great. Well, I called you Phoebe instead. I called you by your character's name instead of your name. Stephanie, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
They do that amongst the cast.
Yes.
Brooks.
Truth be told, I was just getting out of grad school and moving into New York when I got called in for this by my agent that I just got.
Wow.
And come in for Gleam. And the only thing I knew about the play so far was that it had amazing sides, and I liked the writing of it, and it seemed all too familiar. And, of course, hearing the name T.K. and Jane, I was like, okay, I know what this is.
Uh-huh.
So immediately I watched the movie, which I never saw before. There was a movie made for TV for The Eyes Were Watching God.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
I've not seen that, but yeah, I did know it.
Mike Ealy's character. Oh, I saw this last year. Let me read the book again. And then I was like, okay, I get to do this. Marion McClinton, I'm sold.
Wow.
I'm down.
And you all are from New York, right?
No. I am not.
You're from New York?
Yes,
I know you're from New York.
Bred, born,
I can hear
and raised.
Beautiful.
I hear New York.
I'm originally from Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah, but I live there now.
And I'm originally from Chicago, but I've been in Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, where Marion McClinton, the director, is based out of, and we have worked together a number of times. So when this came around, he actually told them to get in touch with me, and I had to audition on tape and send things in, and it was back and forth of waiting and finding out while I was in Minneapolis, not able to come out here because I was doing a show over there, and thankfully, it all worked out for
so
the
you
best.
Live in, that's a great theater
I've been
town.
Living in, yeah.
Incredible theater town.
We got some stuff going on,
yes,
people.
Yes, you do. We're trying to duplicate that in Baltimore. We are like that in a very small way. We need to be in a bigger way.
There's some lovely work going on over here.
Yeah,
great community.
There's a lot of support for theater.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, we've got Kwame here, so I hope that is going to help things explode onto the scene even more.
Yes, indeed. I don't think he will let it not
explode. Passionate energy.
He's just yes.
Out
yes.
There. So, this play is based on this Zora Neale's book. The role of, where to begin even with this, is the women's in this play, mm-hmm. the women's roles in this play. There's such a power. It's like this independence, the strength of women is all through the spine of this work.
Absolutely.
And through the spine that you two bring to this, these characters of yours.
Well, and that's Zora,
yeah,
you know,
that's
and
Zora.
That's that, and that's many of the women that struggled and succeeded mm-hmm. so that I could be here doing what I do today. It's in no way an autobiography at all, but that
right.
spirit of Zora is
right.
very much alive in the strength of the women. No one is anywhere near a victim or a wavering,
right.
indecisive female. No.
there's none of that's there.
No, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to bring life to on stage.
What are you gonna say? About Zora and this piece? I mean, I'm just curious because your character really is like the Greek chorus and also the support.
Yes, well, I think what is very important is to put the piece, and particularly the struggle of women or the journey of women
right.
in this play in proper historical context.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at it from the eyes of early 1900s.
Which is when this was supposed to take place, right?
Yes.
Right.
Then really, it's even more powerful than just observing it from today's eyes, because women were not allowed to be independent, or certainly
right.
social factors were major obstacles. A woman couldn't, I don't want to give away too much, but certainly most people have read the book. But in the beginning, Janie is subjected to an arranged marriage.
Right, an older man.
Yes, yeah,
mm-hmm.
which was common in those days
right.
because a woman couldn't go out and get a job. And so the parents were concerned about protection, you know, on many levels, from being rape, economic protection, all of that.
Which came out of the grandmother's voice very
yes.
powerfully in the piece.
Yes,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
yes. So when you look at it from those eyes, then you go, wow, Janie really was an interesting spirit. And if you look at Zora Neale Hurston's life, of course, her father in real life was the mayor of Eatonville.
Right.
So some of the Jodie Stark's character is, you know, based on her father. And she was that kind of independent spirit. They had conflicts with her even from when she was a child. Her mother died at an early age, when she was young, rather. And the stepmother and her, you know, had conflicts because of Zora's willful spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Harlem Renaissance, where Zora became, you know, a well-known figure, she was highly controversial during that time. She wore pants in public. Women did not wear pants.
Right.
She smoked cigarettes. Women did not smoke cigarettes
right.
publicly. So Zora was quite a willful, determined
She was.
Spirit.
She was there in everybody's face, and this is who I am. And
mm-hmm.
I'm an intellectual, you've got to deal with me. And I'm a woman, you have to
yes.
deal with me. And I'm a black woman, and 1920s, 30s, you have to deal with me.
She exactly.
was, that's who she was.
And it's beautiful to see those spirits, those souls exist beyond time.
Right.
You know,
right.
people will think back, well, this is set in, you know, 1910, so women shouldn't have this, you know, attitude, or their behavior shouldn't be. No, no, no. That spirit is born within you, and go back generations and thousands of years, and you will find those spirits in those. So it's cool to go back and tell that story today, and link it back up to those spirits that are carrying on in young women and men now.
And I think that the character, Brooks, your character, Tea Cake, mm. and all the male characters, really, the reason I think this is an important play, the way it was put together and the characters came out, is that both Zora Neale and the woman who wrote this play created characters that were strong, in most parts positive, but of all the weaknesses human beings have at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's why I liked it so much. Yeah. I mean, your character could easily have been done either by the playwright or by you as a caricature.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I could see somebody, but you didn't do that.
Well, I hope I didn't. I hope I didn't.
You did not do that. I mean, because TK, I mean, because you first see him, he comes on, you think, okay, this guy is just going to be this kind of slick hustler, mm-hmm. and he's not for real, he's got no depth.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. it's easy to be seduced by the cool factor of Tea Cake,
right.
and to even judge him before you even, you know, put impulse to words. He's very much a human. You know, he has, I don't know if I give too much away, but he has a gambling problem.
You can give enough away to just tease him to come onto the play.
You know, just he has enough to add a little hint of danger there to the equation.
He's a very edgy character. There's a lot of danger in him. You don't know what's going to happen with mm-hmm. who he's going to become or what he really is, and character does unfold in that second half of the play.
What I like about the character of Tea Cake, it kind of actually coincides with the theme for me of the play itself, which is the old-fashioned American dream. You have the chance to reinvent yourself and change your cards and change your stars as you see fit. You know, and I feel like that's something like a mantra for him. You know, and kind of may excite Janie. We'll see. But
well, the relationship the two of you have in the play is just your relationship. In the play, and mm-hmm. then Janie's character and Phoebe. Mm-hmm. I mean, the interactions between the two are just so powerful because what they say about our humanity, mm-hmm. who we are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that what your character of Tea Cake was like seeing this piece that was, you know, the whole play was like this. The subtext, in some ways, was despite the white man, despite racism, it doesn't count. We're just making it. We're making this world.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
was. That's why I thought it was so powerful.
Well, Tea Cake is. Excuse me for speaking about your character.
Oh, please. But Tea
Cake was what you would call really a free man.
Yeah.
Because he refused to be controlled by social mores and restrictions,
mm-hmm.
but he found a way to survive.
Right. Right. That's true. I mean, the other male character, Jody,
mm-hmm.
yes.
he was also in his own way.
Yes, he was his own
powerful force, free man, creating a business, becoming.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that Janie sees and has an incredible attraction to because she has that in herself.
Right.
Though, as it is, as a woman, she can't act on it as immediately as they can. So she sees in this man, in Jody, ideals and drive and dreams for something big and something worth the life, worth your life.
Right.
And I think that's something huge for her. She's not willing to live a life not worthy of herself.
Right.
And so that's what she's
more
constantly
than just
trying.
A mule.
You know, more, yes. More than just
a mule.
A mule.
And I also that it is. They're very different in that sense, that your character was this kind of free spirit that wouldn't be controlled by anybody, not by anything over them. I think that's, mm-hmm. that in some ways, maybe your character helped liberate your character, right?
Well, there's, of course, you know, rebelling against the odds, and then there's also just that thirst for life, you know, and being excited about living and discovering new things, and being able to share that with someone else who could potentially be your anchor in life.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
Because when your character's hooked up,
mm-hmm.
I won't give too much away here, but when you guys hooked up, it was like a liberating moment.
Absolutely.
You know, this is...
Absolutely. Janie had now, you know, Janie's... trying not to give things away.
I know, after we have this conversation, people are going to break down the doors and buy tickets and see the play.
They better. Well, yeah. When in Janie and Tea Cake meet, Janie is in a completely different state in her life, a newfound freedom, but without complete direction of where she wants to be, where she wants to go, what she wants to fully have in her life. And there is a... There is a bringing together of possibility beyond what she thought she could do. She always, you know, had been independent and would strive
always
for what she wanted.
When she was a kid.
But he's a whole different world, a whole different world than anything she's ever really known. But it seems possible and exciting, and it's what she wants.
Right.
So she's able to go ahead.
And everybody changed. Your character was transformed in this.
Yes.
Liberated as well.
I think that as a woman in that particular society and culture in Eatonville, Florida, which has a tremendously interesting history.
Oh, it does.
Eatonville.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a,
I mean, all, an all-black township run and owned by black folks.
Yes. Which
in
Florida. Which is where Zora
right,
was from.
Right, right, right.
But she's found a level of contentment. And
Phoebe, your character.
Phoebe has found a level of contentment. And her relationship with Janie, even though she advises her and she's a little older and, you know, she always can give her, as she says, a good thought and a sounding board and advice, there's something deeper inside of Phoebe that Phoebe has never been able to articulate. And Janie's free spirit, youthfulness, and curiosity has pushed that button in Phoebe. And even though Phoebe has found contentment, she loves her husband, Sam, and but there's something that has not been quite fulfilled, and Janie helps to unravel that journey in Phoebe.
You know, and I'm wondering, as you were saying, I was thinking about your work in this Brooks Everett Brantley, who plays Tea Cake. You said, as we were going on the air, that you had just graduated from graduate school,
yes,
I guess, in
yes.
theater?
Yeah, I'm at the University of Connecticut. Just got out this past May. Actually, I did a show in Albany. I did some period donuts in Albany. Then I heard about the audition for this as soon as I got back to the city.
Because I know theater well, know acting and actors well, so the idea of being able to come right out of graduate school and then land yourself at center stage in this play, that's a pretty...
Yeah, I'm pretty happy
pretty good.
About it.
Because when you bring that kind of youthful power to this character, even as gets older. I mean, if you can feel it, it's good work.
Thank you.
It's really good. So I mean, to me, this I don't know what you all think about this, but this why I think maybe this play is important for people to see, just because we don't see a lot from Zora Neale, and people like Zora Neale Hurston. And what this play just says about the roots and power of the black world, I think is just one of the reasons you have to see the play, besides the acting.
Absolutely. I think, I know people will come into this play and first off just go, really? There are like all black towns? No way. Did they dress like that? No, really? Like, you know.
The costumes are incredible. I love
the
costumes.
They are incredible.
Oh, man.
Lovely costumes.
They're just hot. There was so much style back then.
Thank you.
It was just beautiful.
Yes. And, you know, that alone is enough to start blowing people's minds.
Yeah.
which stresses the importance to continue work like this. To honor that history, to bring people knowledge, but it's not history, it's not knowledge at the heart of it. It's a human experience and a story of a journey of discovery of yourself, which every person's on. Every person's life is
Absolutely. This,
and some don't have the courage or find themselves in circumstances where they won't let themselves truly seek that out.
Mm-hmm.
So I am challenged every day through Janie's life to do it in my own.
Because you guys had to get rid of these parts and this play itself. I mean, you had to really, getting into the skin of that period of time to these characters, that's a process in itself that's exciting, what you have to do to become who you became.
You learn a lot about yourself. I mean, even with Tea Cake, this is a guy who knows how to say what he means when he means it.
Right.
And I was saying that's my New Year's resolution because I actually have a tough time doing that. You know,
in your own life,
in my own life, yeah, right, saying right. exactly what I mean to say when it needs to be said, and standing by it. You know, I'm trying to get better at that. And this is a guy who does that all the time and apologizes for nothing.
And did, when in preparing for this, it was the dialect was interesting to me. What you had to do to prepare for this dialect from the early part of the 20th century Florida black world in that manner of speech. How did you do all that?
Well, there are two things. The most immediate answer is that we had a dialect coach.
Which who that's is good. That's good.
Eva Marie Johnson from New York.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Eva Marie.
Thank you.
So, but I want to talk about Zora. One of because you know that she died broke.
Yes.
And penniless.
Tragic.
And she actually had a very difficult life. She was always struggling financially. And had a lot of extreme ups and downs.
Right.
But her work wasn't really celebrated much during her period.
Right.
And, of course, during her life. And it's interesting, her works, and they mainly attribute Alice Walker to helping to revitalize her work, didn't happen to the, you know, maybe late 70s, 80s, and it's only in the last decade. I mean, now her books are required reading in a lot of the public schools and what have you. And poor Zora didn't get an opportunity to enjoy any of this.
Right.
What was the most she made from any book? I can't remember the exact figure, but it was $900 and something.
Right. Yeah, right.
And 71 cents.
Something
that
like
sounds
that.
Familiar.
Right. Oh, wow.
So she didn't even hit $1,000. So it's amazing what's happening now. But one of the reasons she was so controversial is because she wrote in dialect. She wrote in the very vernacular that black and poor people spoke. And you have to look at how we developed that language. She honored it. And black intellectuals, which during her period, during the rise of Zora was also the rise of the black intellectual.
Right.
So, of course, naturally, we would want to deny that part of us because that was the part from our perspective historically showed ignorance and, you know, uneducated. But what Zora said was that it was an art form in and of itself because we took African language that we came here with was separated, different tribes were separated, and we learned English on our own because we were not allowed to read, to write. It was punishable, you know, during slavery. And so a dialect and a language was created, you know, by itself. And so Zora wanted to honor that, and she wanted to, she said it had rhythms and metaphors, and it was rich. And of course, and naturally, you know, her perspective, she came from a very unique situation of an all-black town that was unheard of, you know, and it's a very unique piece of American history. And the rest of us, you know, came up, of course, during Jim Crow and segregation. Zora did not know Jim Crow. Zora did not support Brown versus Brown. So, you know, she was very controversial. But if you look at where she came from.
Brown versus Board of Education?
I mean, yes, thank you.
Right.
No, don't, please. Brown versus the Board of Education.
She didn't support, I didn't know that.
No, she didn't.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. She said, why should we have to integrate with white people? Because she came from a place where she...
Some people are still asking that question. Right.
But if you look at where she came from, you can understand her perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can also understand that finally black people were being acknowledged as intellectual thinking beings. And so, you know, we started writing as intellectuals, if you look at the writers she came up with. So they got very angry with, here she comes with these, them, this,
and
them.
Us, yeah. And us. Right.
You know, so there's an argument to both sides. And it's only now with today's eyes that we can look at both.
Exactly. See audiences,
it.
When they first hear, go, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what? Why are they talking? What are they doing?
But yes.
Then you have to, but I think that adds to the power just as just as Shakespearean.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Took the word dialect, all time out.
In language, you know, it's
dialect, a, you know, black dialect.
Right, right. So it was very close. Did, yeah. You know, and I thought the stage design was really interesting, and the sound was, especially the second half.
There's stuff going on.
Whoa. That was...
We can't really hear it the same way that the audience can, because we don't have a perspective. The same perspective.
Right.
Not the same one.
And so, I would say also just about the three of you, and I guess I haven't personally met the other actors yet, but and it's my audience listening now, actually, I'll just hear this, is that the three people I'm talking to right now, Christiana Clark, Brooks Edward Brantley, and Stephanie Barry, three of the main characters in this play, Gleam at Center Stage, you don't even look like you look on the stage. I'm serious. I mean, you have on the stage, the three of you, and I guess some of the others as well, but completely transformed the way you look.
Good to hear.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't have recognized you as Christiana completely. It was amazing.
Well, lots of perspective we don't have either.
Right.
Yes. Exactly.
Audience.
But, no, that's true. I mean, that's part of being an actor, being able to kind of.
Yeah, that's part of the beauty of theater. And then it's also the thing of Marion McClinton, the director in the room, in the rehearsal room, was saying how theater in and of itself is this just big, it's one big lie. And our goal is to get a mass of people to pay money to believe this giant lie that they know is a lie and stay with us for 2 hours and let us lie to them over and over and over again. You present this world and all. It just takes a second for the audience to be with you. So it's on us and on the production team and on the design team to do all that we can to create the world that we're telling, even if it's not, you know, a straightforward play, even if it's something more absurd or skew of a telling of a story. We present that world. It takes the audience a minute or so to get into that world, but once they're there, that's where we are.
Right.
And so you can believe that I'm 16 in 1 minute, and then 15 minutes later, you know, I'm 24, and then I'm 40. And yes, that's what you see, and that's what you believe. You know, it's everything else in myself using my instrument to age, you know, with what I can.
It's amazing. I really love the play. We're coming back tomorrow night to see it again.
Wonderful.
Oh, yes.
I encourage everybody to join me there. Before we close out, what do you think of Baltimore? Is this your first sojourn to Baltimore?
First time,
I've been to Baltimore.
My first time.
I thought you've worked at Center Stage before, right?
No, I've never worked at Center Stage.
Where'd you work?
Well, I did Invasion with Nicole Kidman, was filmed here.
Oh, yeah.
So we were here for a while filming that movie. And then I did a play at The Lyric.
Oh, The Lyric. Right.
Yes, a couple of years ago.
Right.
We had a run.
But this is your first time for you all in Baltimore?
Yeah, first time in Baltimore. It's been good.
You had crab cakes yet?
Yes.
So I was.
I didn't.
You did? Oh, we have to. We're going to remedy that before you go.
Okay. We went down to Fresh in Townsend, had their crab cakes. I was a fan of that. Who else?
Maybe I have to make some of my famous crab cakes. And
maybe. No, maybe. No. Definitely.
Okay, everyone in the listening audience has heard him make this commitment.
I'll bring him with me Tuesday night.
All right, tomorrow night.
Okay, 'cause I love crab cakes.
Yes.
If you can find some corn crab chowder, it's around.
I don't know how to make all that, but I can take it.
You can find some.
Our place, the Mount Vernon Saloon.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that's where we go all the time.
Oh, yeah, right. That's one place that stays open late.
Yes.
Good people. They take care of us.
So, folks, we've been sitting here with three incredible people, incredible actors in this production of Gleam at Center Stage. Brooks Edward Brantley, who plays Tea Cake, Christiana Clark, who plays Janie, and Stephanie Barry, who plays Phoebe Watson. A play based on Zora Neale Hurston's book, Their Eyes Were Watching God. And Glebe runs through next Sunday. So this is your last week to see it, and you don't want to let this play go by without you seeing it. And if you want to see it, what's the number you got to call? The number you have to call is 410-332-0033. And that'll be, or go to centerstage.org, and that'll be on our website as well. But do yourself a favor, support local theater and see an incredible play with incredible acting in it, especially these three people who are in our studio now. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And it's perfect for Valentine's Day.
It is.
It's a little early, but.
That's right.
It is perfect.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Bring the one you love.
Thank y'all. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at SteinerShow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.